me getting you viral or not is like, don't know, but yeah, I just wish you get viral. It's a chiham bajate, bachaun. So for me, as an openly queer person, the idea was to self-sustain my livelihood. Quite a long back, somebody asked me to just blow off to that man in an elevator because all they think people from our community are there to please their pleasures.
Do you think that everything would just be too haphazard?
So mere mein aur kisi sadak pe bahar khade hue kinnar ya hijra mein jo red light pe khada hai, usme sirf ye farak hai my parents stood by me.
I think we really underestimate this idea of coexisting.
See, I was fat, I was fair, and I was femme.
Welcome to the podcast, Akash.
Thank you.
Often known as the voice of rebel. How are you?
I'm good. And thank you, Akriti. I love the fact that I'm at Beyond's borders. Yes, and boundaries as well. Rebel or no rebel, I don't know. But if living yourself out loud and proud is rebel, then it's all worth it.
So how about you tell me about the trail from Delhi's Che to Bollywood?
That's quite a journey. I'm born and raised in Delhi 6 Chani Chowk. Delhi 6 Chani Chowk ke mohalle se galiyon se nikal ke Bollywood ki chamakti hui duniya mein jana was not easy, but it was destined. I would say no my big efforts. It was just about me being very proactively working for myself, for bringing a brand of jewelry for my well-being, because often people from my identity forget the fact that at the end of the day, it is not about just who we are, but how we sustain our lives, and people forget that. So for me, as an openly queer person, the idea was to self-sustain my livelihood. And that path took me from Delhi 6 to Bollywood. And it's been great.
Okay. You've worked with some of the renowned Bollywood actors like Kangana Ranaut, Zayn Ataman, Sushmita Sen, amongst others.
Yeah.
So I want to know your journey or your feelings when it comes to discrimination versus inclusion when it comes to Bollywood.
See, I think Bollywood is not the only place where you can see discrimination or inclusion. It is everywhere, whether it's the media industry at large or it is our daily routine. But I think it is... Actually, I want to break the myth of the fact that people say, oh, you're a designer, oh, you're working in Bollywood, or oh, you're so-and-so, you can live a colorful life. No, not really. There is a discrimination which is everywhere. Let's not forget that there can be homophobic, transphobic, and I should say happy-phobic people everywhere.
Okay. Yeah. Why don't you give us some examples?
I don't want to put in up an experience in words because... How many examples should I give you? It's a daily
okay.
routine for me. It's like getting up out of the bed and facing the world, which can be really disgusting towards an identity like me.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not that one big episode leads to anything in life. It's many, many small
yeah.
episodes when they're collecting and they're recollecting. Yeah. It leads to a trauma and, yeah, so it's not easy. I remember somebody... Back in, 2017, yeah, quite a long back, somebody asked me to just blow off to that man in an elevator because all they think people from our community are there to please their pleasures.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that conception of
yeah.
the community is just being there to be giving you pleasures. But that triggered me because by 2017, I was already known as a designer and I was doing great. And here somebody is not looking me through a lens of a creative being, but a sexual being.
Yeah.
So that was really provocative to me.
You've used jewelry design at least for a decade as a representation of your feelings and your beliefs as well, right? So what would you say when it comes to jewelry as a political statement is like for you?
You know, I think it's me who's very politically or socially active as an individual, and I observe almost any and everything happening around me as in society or at the nation at large. And I thought my medium, which is jewelry, should also be a medium of expression to what I believe in is diversity. So we make diverse pieces. We may use diverse mediums and raw materials to put in together a fancy piece of art. And that's what my idea of bringing the diversity in. Also, I land up being... You know, what should I say? Should I even sound so self-boosted or not? But yeah, so in 2017, I'll end up having the first batch of trans women walking as a runway model. It never happened in India before. So a lot of things actually happened in 2017 while I was coming out, making these bold statements through my shows, and somebody asked me, why do you have trans models out of nowhere? You got them on board for the show. I said, because I belong to the community and this is the least I can do. I faced backlash back home because I came out openly by saying that I belong to the community. But I thought these are the ways that I, as an individual, could bring in change or at least talk about it.
So also back in 2014, you started the initiative called Pride India. That was to help the community. And why did you start that? And how has that taken you forward?
I think I started Pride India from a space of being a rebel, as you mentioned in the beginning, because I was like, for long, the word shame was attached to people like us and the identity we belong to. And for long, we were kept in the margins of the world, or to say to the country we live in. And I realized, no, we are not the shameful side corner elements of the nation we belong to. We are contributing individuals, and we believe in the fact that mainstreaming the society and merging the mainstream society with community like ours is very important. And that's how I started Pride India. The idea was not to work towards only the community, to be honest. The idea was to work with allies, to work with people like you, who's inviting people like us. You're an absolute ally who wants to talk about us, who wants to listen about us, and who wants to share and give and take. All we need is love, right? All we need is empathy. All we need is a little more space to grow. That is where the Pride India idea came, that let's unite individuals who are looking forward to bring in change, irrespective of the gender or their choices in life, but those who are looking forward to bring in change for the larger community. Because, you know, my fight throughout the initiative that I take is sensitizing parents, is sensitizing school teachers, is sensitizing HR policy makers, because they are the people who are really affecting the policy making. Or our breadwinners at home are parents, right? If I, as a being, would have not given roti kapda makan in my ghar mein, I would have stand on a roadside, right? So mere mein aur kisi sadak pe bahar khade hue kinnar ya hijra mein jo red light pe khada hai, usme sirf ye farak hai, my parents stood by me. And that made my journey easier, because I had my basics roti kapda makan with me. I was able to go through the fact that yes, I can sustain, I can see to better things, I can have a better education, I can pursue my choices in life as careers and others like that. Which is a sad part, that at very young kids are thrown out of homes. Yeah. Their mainstream educations go nowhere, their careers go nowhere. And that's the area I want to work in, to sensitize parents and the structure at large to be an inclusive space.
Yeah, often in conversations, like when we ask you that what you believe in, and basically when we say that someone's gone beyond the border, especially in your community, you feel like they're victimized. And you said that I don't want to stand as a victim talking about it. And you wanted to talk about the struggles that you have despite being a victim. So you anyways come from like an upper middle class family in the society, and they have their fair share of struggles, which of course we don't usually either understand or comprehend, because we feel like, oh, if you have a higher stature or if you have money, things are just better, which is not true. So how was that for you, especially when it comes to your mental health and the issues that you had in that angle? Because after COVID, we all have started working more on ourselves. But I feel like marginalized communities in general have mental health problems from the beginning.
Yeah, so do I. I had a history of mental health issues, and I recently recovered from one such episode. You know what happens day in, day out? When you get up, the first thought that used to come in my mind was, why me? Main kyun? Bhagwan mere saath aisa kyun kiya, right? It just took me a thought and say to myself, why not me? Main nahi to aur kaun? And then I felt like everybody else doesn't even have that power to be who I am or to execute things how I do. And that mindset helped me change. But this cannot be everybody's case, and this is not that easy to reach that level. It takes back to back, everyday practice to tell yourself that no matter what, you love yourself. No matter what, you believe in who you are. Not because you want to prove someone else, but because this will bring you peace. This will bring you home to your own self, because we keep on searching acknowledgements, acceptance, validations. But do we begin within? We're seeking it out. Why? The day you accept who you are, how you are, and what you're gonna be, it's a very beautiful, blissful space, because you feel like, wow, I've achieved. Now I don't need anybody to tell me how and who I am and what am I looking like, what gender I belong to or what gender I should belong to, and how should I wear and what should I behave like. Because these are very, very integral insecurities that we develop with time if we keep on ignoring it. And we keep on seeking validations from people. I believe mental health at large can only be worked out when you have people to talk to, mm-hmm. when we have people to share with, and when we have peace within to be who we are. And I'm telling you, it's not easy. I have no shortcuts to tell you about it. It's a process, but I certainly believe self-security, you know, or to be honest, insecurity leads to a lot of issues. Yeah. Because we'll then let the command of our happiness and our being to someone else. And that's problematic.
You generally talk a lot about culture and society and community, and those are our general conversations whenever we meet as well. So what do you think is the fine line between traditional India and modern India?
I don't know what is the fine line. The fine line one has to set for themselves every day and for themselves individually, because we are sitting here and doing a podcast, which is a modern day technology. I'm wearing a beautiful ajrak, which is an absolute ethnic Indian wear. And this amalgamation and this beauty of we being Indians can really celebrate of the fact that we have technology to upgrade ourselves, and we can wear our culture on the sleeves and bring in a balance for it. But is it easy? It is not, because we are little privileged to be where we are sitting, mm-hmm. and how we are talking, and we might not make sense to many of those who are not in a privileged space. We might not make sense to somebody in Roorkee or Sonipat or Himachal or any part of the second tier cities, and they would be like, what is he talking? Because LGBTQ hota kya hai aur ye to hote hi nahi hai aur ye kahan se hote hain? Because hamare desh mein इस डाइवर्स पहचान के लिए कभी बात नहीं हुई. एंड दिस इज़ वेयर आई फील द फैक्ट दैट समवेयर द रूरल इंडिया, द कंजर्वेटिव इंडिया इज स्टिल डिटैच्ड और इज स्टिल नॉट इन कॉर्ड्स विद द यूथ ऑफ द जेंजीज.
I'm going to circle back to one thing you said here, but I first want to know that since we're talking about modern India and technology anyways, what is it like that a 16-year-old Akash had that probably a 16-year-old boy right now doesn't have, or vice versa, with the aging technology or the aging life that we have?
See, the 16-year-old Akash had caricature of an identity to look in TV for who we were. When the TV came and when TV had caricaturized our identity on television, I had that vision that technology gave me, that television bring in home, songs like Maa Ka Laadla Bigad Gaya, or with due respect to individuals who were just feminized and ridiculed and no integrity left of them on the television or in the movies, because that was we were considered to. So at that time when I looked, because now kids, these new generation kids, they can just look at Insta and check out that there's somebody sitting like me or somebody sitting like anybody else from the community, making sense, talking sense, bringing sense on board, doing their livelihood. They are not the individuals who are going to be just be ridiculed for who they are. We're going to stand up and talk about it. It's okay to be who you are and be yourself.
Yeah. And circling back to your previous answer that you made, that we are privileged. And I feel like a lot of us, I'm also privileged, but I feel like the things that I feel and the distress that I have is often misunderstood as like entitlement instead of something that should be worked upon. And I was reading a book like yesterday, and there was this line where it said that when we talk about, let's say, dysfunctional families, we always take it in a negative connotation and we love them so much that we don't want to associate them with a negative word like dysfunctional, when that's not actually a negative word, but it's acceptance of the give and take that exists in relationship. And all of this, I think, is the fact that we come from a society where we feel if we have any sort of privilege, we don't have the right to form weaknesses. We don't have the right to talk about our weaknesses. Mm. As a matter of fact, we don't even have the right to have a weakness. And I think that is important to talk about.
You know, the very idea of people believing us being privileged is their viewpoint. Why I use a term privilege in this case of mine is because that keeps me a little better, keeps me in a space of gratitude, and keeps me in a space of not calling out anybody's achievements as bigger or smaller, and to work on my own self, that be thankful to what I have and be responsible to what I don't have or what I want to achieve for myself or for the community I belong to or to the people I live with.
Yes. I mean, one of the reasons why I requested you to come on this podcast was not only to talk about your achievements and your initiatives that you're doing, but also that our conversations revolve a lot around what the society needs and what conversations need to exist in the society. So I want to start off by understanding that what is it that you feel made you decide that your personal and private life and your professional life go very hand in hand, and there is not much distinction between the two. Doesn't that end up taking a toll on you?
Not really. And trust me, I am very, very, very particular of keeping my personal space very personal. And I know how to fair balance it. I would not be someone who's going to give access to people in my personal space by telling them what I eat, where I go, what I shop, what bed I sleep on, or what bed I wake out of. But the only space where I want them to associate with my private personal space or my personal being is my being itself as a queer individual. That I exist and I'm from the community and I work, and that is where I want people to know that we can work, we can sustain, and we can live a life with dignity. And that's the side of the world that I often let people see. Otherwise, there's no end of giving somebody else your space. They can be really intrusive, and I don't. I just come. Also, you become in a lot of pressure and tension of telling the world, oh, aaj kya kiya. You know, you post 4 stories and the 5th day you don't, and say, where are you? Are you lost?
Yeah,
are you not around? So if you see my Insta, I hardly post pictures or share stories. But when I do, it's all about community or about the issue I believe to talk about.
Yeah, no. But do you think in life that advocacy, professional life, personal life, are they different pillars of who you are? Or because mixing them together, the reason I'm asking you this is because there are a lot of people, like very opinionated people. I also feel that I'm opinionated, but I feel that people out there in the world who are advocates, and their professional life and their advocacy are going so hand in hand that they end up forgetting that there is a world out there that doesn't follow their opinions, and they need to know how to live with it. And I feel like then their personality revolves around their advocacy, which I personally don't think that it should be around that. Because when you're advocating for something, I advocate for women's rights. I think women should have rights. I advocate for feminism as well, which I mean gender equality. All genders should have the same pay, should have the same opportunities. And I'm talking about cerebral opportunities. I don't say that I should lift up 100 kgs when I know that I can't do it physically. But at the same time, like, if I keep putting that in every conversation, I feel like I don't have room to open my thoughts and my ideas to other people's suggestion and their opinions, whether I agree or disagree is second. But like, just to listen and have like an ear out there, I think it's very hard. Don't you think like that becomes a problem as well when everything is mixed together?
You know, I don't know. When people want to see me as a queer activist, and when people want to see me as a designer, or when people want to see me as an Indian, or when people want to see me as Agrawal, to belong to the caste, culture, creed and the religion or what I do, it's they who pick and choose to see what they wish to see. I am in whole is a composition of what all that I carry on sleeves. I talk about what I believe in, I live how I believe in, I work as I what wish to work like, and all of these are my entities which make Akash as an individual. I often get messages about people of, why are you talking about such and such issue and putting your opinion on while you're a designer or you're only a gay rights activist and nothing else? You can't talk about human rights at large, you can't talk about women's rights, you can't talk about as simple, basic, like talking, giving your viewpoints upon what's happening in Pelgam, right? Mm-hmm. And there'll be people who'll call you out, as because that's not zone that you should get in, stick to your notes. I'm like, with my notes is that I am someone who is not just one being that you see me through. I'm every being of myself. And each of these are different identities make me whole as who I am.
Mm-hmm.
I cannot differentiate. I cannot part policies, politics, identity, creativity apart. Make sure that not every podium is worth talking about it all together.
Yeah.
But aai jata hai. Mere case mein toh, even if you call me to some fancy event and somebody is doing some sheer shit, I'll be the first one to call out.
Call it out, yeah. What I do want to understand here is that there is a difference in everything that you do. But how is it that you want to advocate for all these things? And why is it that
I don't want to advocate about anything. Okay. This is quite a pressurized word.
Okay.
Let me not. I want to live as all of it.
Okay. So many a times you say that when I asked you that, can I address you as a he or a she or a they, you like just address me as Akash and I am free flowing. So you're like water basically. And no, but what I do want to understand here is that obviously I also disagree with the fact that everything by the society or in general, in general, when you're living in this world, everything has a certain type of stereotype, and there is obviously a reason for it, but it's not even right to have it. But if everyone is free flowing, do you think that everything would just be too haphazard?
I don't know about everything. I'm managing well. I'm not in a haphazard space. And when I tell you to address me as Akash, is again comes back to a point that you see a he in me, you see a she in me, you see a they in me, or you see nothing in me, is your call. I trust me, Akriti, I come from a generation where we were ridiculed for who we were. You know, this whole new idea, which I completely appreciate, of people asking how should I address you, and people are choosing what and how they wish to be addressed, is a great way forward. But somebody like me, who's too old, I should say, come from a generation where we were not asked, but we were told.
Yeah.
We were told that you are so and so, you're a third class individual, your choices in life is not great, you're being a gay is not even gay as a word, as a femboy who was looked down, right? From that space where I land up letting all the slurs which were onto me and didn't give them a damn, I only feel happy enough to somebody having a thought to ask me that, how should we address you? But again, when I started and I told you that it is so much about self-validation and not seeking out, that I know who I am and I am okay for you to address how you see me. You know, if you see a he in me, I'm not as gonna try my best to tell you, no, can't you see the feminine side in me? Hello, if you can't, you can't. And if you see a feminine side in me, great. Am I not, what should I say? I feel like I have a very fine balance of a Shiva and Shakti, the Ardhanarishwar concept. I love it. I love the fact that both yin and yang coexist in me and coexist very well. And be required how and when I use it.
I think when it comes to privileges also, some we have are that we do have places where we have safe space, like the table where we were talking, and I was so non-judgmental that I've not been in a place like that for a very long time. What is it that you think or you are doing, which might be a really small step also, but trying to make this a safer space for either the coming generation or just the people around you?
Nothing. No hard work that side. Because why? What will you do? You can't do anything except living your life honestly.
No, but I think you can, right? Like, just but the act of listening.
But the fact is this, that you land up living a very honest, real, to-the-point life and share it with the world. I think it's good enough. Like, like my cousin doesn't need to be gay to walk up to me to address his issues in life.
No, that's not what I meant.
And that is, no, but that is a safe space creation, no? That this guy is non-judgmental, living his life openly, I think he will understand me.
No, exactly. Like,
and that conversation for somebody else becomes a safe space.
Yes, exactly.
That's how it should be. Like, you should... That's what when people ask, what should allies do? Allies should do nothing. Just let it
just
be.
Just exist.
Just exist. Just let the other person grow.
I think we really underestimate this idea of coexisting.
Yeah.
Because we feel like we need to fight to make a space instead of just coexisting with each other. And one thing that I'd like to point out also is that usually my personality has not been of a great listener, not because I'm judgmental, but it's like I have so much to say and stuff like that, you know. But last few years I've noticed that I have so many secrets of my friends that probably they've shared with no one but confined in me, just because they feel like, even if it's the worst thing and I don't agree with them, I will have like poker face, because I'll be like, you told me, I heard it, fine. And yesterday only, I had almost a 6-hour long conversation with a friend. And he was like, you're so vulnerable. You allow me to be so vulnerable. And I've never been like that with anyone. And I think he's 28, 29 years old. And the fact that he said that to me, though I've been told this before, but when he said it and he was in tears, and I'm like, I didn't do anything. I was probably quiet on the phone, maybe just like, you know, washing my face or something while you're speaking, but like with full concentration. And if he ever saw my face, he said something and he'd be like, oh, iska chehra aise ho jayega, waise ho jayega. So mine was just like, okay, you did it. And I think, I don't know if I'm trying to do that or it comes naturally, but I want that to happen, because my mother created that for me. She created that for my brother. My grandparents did that. And I just think that
And the word safe space never existed then.
It didn't, but they still
did. Remember that? Yeah. Yes. It has to be that organic, actually.
Absolutely, because if I could go up to my grandfather and tell him that I have a boyfriend and my mother doesn't like him much, you know, you should meet him and stuff like that. I think that that's a safe space that he created, and he was like all chill about it.
Yeah.
You know, back in the school days, I think most of us were bullied. And I also know through my therapy session that really affects a lot. I am sorry to say that I am also kind of sure that you would have gone through the same thing.
Who doesn't know?
I think the bullies don't have.
As long as the bully is not telling their side of the story, so I even can give them a benefit of doubt. But yeah, see, I was fat, I was fair, and I was feminine. And it was quite FFF to face the bullies. Or to be targeted by bullies, because what happens, no? You are not discriminated or bullied on just being fat or just being feminine. you're being bullied on two angles of it.
Mm-hmm.
And you're considered as a weak person, not as just feminine, but as fat too. And your strength goes down in front of a larger men, and they think like, oh, this is a good roll or toast. And I faced that for very long. And I think it has not stopped in my life yet. I don't think so. Anybody can say, now nobody bullies us.
No.
It's just that when we grow, we don't give them a damn.
Yeah, that's true.
Our bullies reduce. Yeah. Or our bullies don't exist for us.
We can filter it.
We can filter it from... So, when we are younger, we don't know the mechanism to handle our bullies, because these are the places which our parents don't want to talk to. The school and the administration doesn't want to dwell in, and the child faces it.
Yeah.
But with time, I realize that that bully has all the power in the world just because I let it happen onto me. Or just because I heard it out and believed in what they said to me, that you're weak, that nothing good be happening with you, because there was nobody to talk to.
Mm-hmm.
The major issue is that people from my identity and community have no knowledge. Like, I remember when I was growing up, I really never know the terminology of the LGBTQIA, that does it exist. I only knew that I'm a child who's worth to be killed or be dead, and trigger warning there. But because you're a mess, because you have some issues, and there was nobody to address the issues or to address the mess that I was going in, because we were not considered equal. Yeah. So bullying at large exists to anybody and everybody.
Yeah.
It starts in childhood, stays very, very, very loud in our head till date, because there are initial years of impressions of what the world gives to us. And when you say the word bully, I can still go back to my school memory and I can remember all of that I faced it, and it was difficult. And very sad to say that there are still kids who are suiciding, who are helpless, and who are unable to address the issue of the bullying because the society at large is not ready to accept them as who they are and then to address the issue they're facing.
I have a yes or no question for you. Do you think everyone should seek therapy?
Everyone should seek within.
Okay, yeah. So I just want to know in like three words, what made you decide that you want to quit Bollywood? In just three words, the top three that come into your mind.
Self-esteem. Homesickening, individualistic, spiritual seeking.
Okay. And now I have a last question before we go to the segment. So that would be that not only through this podcast, but also through the initiatives that you're taking, what are like two changes that you really would like to see in the society?
One thing is the fact that let people be. Let people be, and it is absolutely important. And second thing that I want people to, I think a very good education system which is available at zero cost, and the government of India should support it to every child. I believe education can only bring in change. Education can bring in change to a community like ours and to community like anywhere. Any underprivileged person, any discriminated person, if educated well and proper, can lead to a better life.
So my last segment is where I would need you to give advice to anyone who wants to go beyond the border.
Go beyond the borders and grow, not on a dusted, sandy dune, but on a harvesting land. And that harvesting land is nothing but you coming from a space of hope, coming from a space of self-belief, and coming from a space of feeling secure of who you are. That's very important, instead of seeking validation in a dusted, bare land.
Hello. Then thank you so much.
Pleasure.
For taking our time.
Pleasure.
And we hope that you continue to inspire people.
Thank
with
you.
Your work.
Thank you. And I hope you get viral. Beyond borders get viral. Me getting you viral or not is like, don't know, but yeah, I just wish you get viral.
Thank you. We're done. Thank you so much for staying until the end. To help us continue these conversations, please subscribe on YouTube and like and follow on Instagram and Spotify.